Welcome to another week of our 4.5 year verse-by-verse journey through all of God's inspired and written word. I hope you're ready to dive back into the book of Job. We're in chapter 13. We're going to start at verse 20 in just a moment. Let me remind you again, Job should not be looked at as strictly wisdom literature that we should glean lots of smart things from, because it actually contains a lot of bad philosophy presented by Job's three friends, so-called. When we approach this book, we have to understand some key components. Number one, Job and his friends know nothing of chapters 1 and 2. So they know nothing of the supernatural background. So they make some false assumptions that God is the one doing this stuff to Job, when in fact it is not. It is Satan that is doing this stuff to Job. True, it's happening with God's permission, but it is actually Satan doing Job harm, not God. Number two, at the end of the book, when God starts speaking, it becomes clear that Job's three friends are in trouble with God because they have sinned. They have said things that they should never have said. They've made accusations they should have never made. And God strikes them with the very punishment that they were accusing Job of being under. And Job actually has to pray for them for their forgiveness. So when we look at the center of the book, the core of the book, we have to remember that Job's friends are in the wrong. And even though some of the things they say sound reasonable, they're being applied in an unreasonable fashion. And so we have to make sure we pay attention to that. And then finally, Job is acting out of hurt and pain and emotion. And so a lot of the things that he says should be, you know, seen in that sort of understanding. And so God kind of gives him a pass on some of the things that he says that come to the border of making accusations against God. All right, so with that background in mind, we're in chapter 13. Job has been responding to the third guy that's been accusing him of being a secret sinner under God's judgment, and basically told them again, you guys just need to shut up because I have a case to lay before God, if he'll just listen, to show that I am not guilty of sin and I should not be under his judgment. And then he shifts to talking to God. And we see this several different places. He'll be talking to his associates, and then he'll shift and talk to God next. So verse number 20 of chapter 13 is where he starts talking to God. He says, "Only grant me two things, then I will not hide myself from your face. Withdraw your hand far from me, and let not dread of you terrify me." So God, please call it off. All this bad stuff that's happening to me. The most recent, of course, is his physical health has been broken. God, just stop that. Stop this attack on my physical form. Don't let me be so afraid of you. Verse 22, "Then call, I will answer, or let me speak, and you reply to me." So first stop the pain, and then let's have a conversation. You either call on me, or just give me permission to talk to you, so that I can hear why. See, that's the big thing that Job wants to know. Why? And we can all relate to that. When bad things are happening in our lives, we often ask that question, why? Some people phrase it, why is God doing this to me? And immediately I go, that's not the proper form. Why is God allowing this to happen to me? That's the proper form. And so here, Job's asking that form. Verse number 23, how many are my iniquities and my sins? Make me know my transgression and my sin. So if this is happening because of my sin, lay that out so that I can repent of it, so I can know specifically what I've done wrong. Because Job, rightfully so, doesn't believe he's done anything wrong. Verse 24, why do you hide your face and count me as your enemy? Will you frighten a driven leaf? If you can picture the leaves falling down from the trees and they get caught in the wind, do you go chasing after them, you know, and attack that leaf? Or pursue dry chaff, you know, the leftover of the harvest process that blows along in the wind? Does anyone see those as something that needs to be beat up? So that's what he's saying. I'm nothing here. For you write bitter things against me and make me inherit the iniquities of my youth. The writing here may be a kind of a reference to the idea that God keeps a record of everything. And so Job is like, are you like keeping this long account of bad things I've done from way back when I was a stupid kid? And that's what's coming to fruition here, is I'm paying a penalty of judgment for that? Is that what's happening? You put my feet in the stocks, a form of detention, and watch all my paths. You set a limit for the soles of my feet. Basically, you put me on lockdown. You put me on house arrest or home arrest. You put the ankle bracelet on me so that I can't go anywhere but right here. And remember, he's so sick and ill, he can hardly move anywhere. It hurts just to try to lay around or sit around, let alone walk. Man wastes away like a rotten thing, like a garment that is moth-eaten. Now, that's a generic statement that all humanity just gets older and older and more decrepit, and their bodies start breaking down, things like that. But in his case specifically, it's almost literal, because his body is being eaten away by illness, by sickness, and he feels as if he's like an old, rotten garment that just needs to be thrown away. Chapter 14. Man who is born of a woman is few in days and full of trouble. So now a little philosophy from Job. Humanity, because of the fall at the very beginning of Genesis, history of humanity, chapter number 3, that cycle of being born into the world with trouble, and you live a short period of time, relatively speaking, compared to living forever, which is what God's original intention was. So living shorter and shorter lives, and those lives have got lots of trouble in it. He comes out like a flower, and then he withers. So Jesus uses similar language like this. It comes into the wisdom literature as well, Proverbs, Ecclesiastes. When the spring rains, you know, and the warm sunshine hits the ground, a lot of the flowers will just suddenly pop up and throw on those blooms. But then, particularly in the Middle East, when the dry summer hits shortly thereafter, those flowers just wither off, drop off, and the plants themselves very often shrivel up because of the heat. So he says that's the way being a human being is. We have this burst early in life, and then it's downhill from there. He flees like a shadow and continues not. They used a lot of shadow clocks to keep time during the day. And so what happens to the shadow in the afternoon? Well, it keeps moving and moving and moving and moving, and then it gets super, super, super long, and then it disappears. That's life. do you open your eyes on such a one and bring me into judgment with you? Who can bring a clean thing out of an unclean? There is not one. So Job says, are you judging me in my life for sin? And then Job, I think, kind of makes a bit of a confession here. I am not a perfect human being. There is no doubt about that. Nobody around here. It's probably a beginning concept to the Romans passage. All have sinned and fall short of God's glory. All of us have done that. If we say we have not sinned, we are a liar. We're making God out to be a liar. Since his days are determined, and the number of his months is with you, and you've appointed his limits that he cannot pass, then look away from him, leave him alone, that he may enjoy, like a hired hand, his day. So it's another one of those places where Job says, since you know exactly who I am, how much time I have, if you're really going to come down on me for some sort of sin that I'm not aware of what's going on here, could you just at least give me a little bit of breathing space before you finally take me down? Verse 7, for there is hope for a tree. If it can be cut down, that it will sprout again, and then its shoots will not cease. This is a phenomena all of us are familiar with when we've tried to cut down trees that we didn't want anymore, a nuisance tree. And if we don't get that stump dug out, if we don't grind it out, if we don't poison it, burn it, something, sooner or later, it's going to put up sprigs, sprouts, and it can start all over again. And so he uses it in a positive fashion here. At least a tree that's been chopped down has hope for starting fresh, starting over again. Verse 8, though its root grows old in the earth and its stump dies in the soil, yet at the scent of water it will bud and put out branches like a young plant. But, and this is the contrast, a man dies, he is laid low, man breathes his last, and where is he? So when a tree appears to fully die, there's always that possibility its roots are not quite dead. It'll be back. But when a man dies, he's dead. We're referencing the body here. He breathes that last breath, and they stick him in the ground. That's the end. He doesn't interact with people anymore. As waters fail from a lake and a river wastes away and dries up, so a man lies down and rises not again till the heavens are no more. He will not awake or be roused out of his sleep. Again, I need to emphasize here that when we refer to death, we can look at it from two distinct angles. In the one angle, we are focused on the body. When the physical body dies, that is the end for that body. It does not get up and reanimate and go around. It gets stuck into a tomb, it rots, it's burned up, whatever happens to it, it is gone. Here, Job says, that's the end until the end comes. We'll find out later, he believes in a bodily resurrection at the end of history, at the end of time. But then we have the other angle, which is about the spirit of humanity, the individual, that animates that body. We can see it in the book of Genesis that God breathed into the nostrils of that form made of clay the breath of life, and that man became a living individual, living soul. So when the soul, spirit, is separated from that body, the body is disposed of, but the soul, spirit, goes to a waiting place in the Old Testament time called Sheol. And so that's what he brings up next, verse 13. Oh, that you would hide me in Sheol, that you would conceal me until your wrath is past, that you would appoint me a set time and remember me. So he says, I wish you'd just let me die. My spirit could go to Sheol. My body could be put into the ground. And then we could just wait until everything shakes out. Verse 14, if a man dies, shall he live again? And that is rhetorical, expected to be answered in the positive. All the days of my service, I would wait till my renewal shall come. That idea of the resurrection. The Old Testament saints knew from information passed down through, you know, the generations that there is an eventual bodily resurrection that's coming. And so Job is kind of putting his focus, his trust in that idea. And that's why he's a little bit more hopeful that God had just let him die and get it over with, because then he could move on to the next stage. You would call and I would answer you. You would long for the work of your hands. That would be himself. For then you would number my steps. You would not keep watch over my sin. My transgression would be sealed up in a bag, and you would cover over my iniquity. So here's some expectations he has of ultimate redemption. Now, this is all happening before a single word of the Bible has been written down. This is before Moses comes on the scene, and he's the first author of the first books of Scripture. So he is functioning on information that's been passed down to him, that somewhere out there in the future, God has a plan to deal with sin, which is the thing that causes the death, the thing that causes separation from God, the thing that brings judgment. That has a resolution somewhere out there in the future. And so he is expressing a faith that God will take care of that. Verse 18, but the mountain falls and crumbles away. The rock is removed from its place. We're talking about time going on. The waters wear away the stones. Apparently, we got a lot of time going on here. The torrents wash away the soil of the earth. So here we've got the idea of, you know, erosion. And so you destroy the hope of man. So time takes its toll on each human being until they die. You prevail forever against him, and he passes. You change his countenance and send him away. This is death. You die, and that's the end for your body. His sons come to honor, and he doesn't know it. They are brought low, and he perceives it not. He feels only the pain of his own body, and he mourns only for himself. So Job ends again focused on death. And we see this is a, I would call it a natural reaction to when you're going through intense physical pain, disease, disaster. There is, at the climax of feeling that hopelessness, a desire to just die and get it over with, because you can move on, at least in that way. So Job is death-centric still in a lot of what he has to say. Now we go back to friend number one, again, so-called friend number one, chapter 15, verse 1. Then Eliphaz the Temanite answered and said, you know, hopefully he's learned a thing or two by listening to Job. I'm being facetious there. Should a wise man answer with windy knowledge and fill his belly with the east wind? So he's basically calling Job a windbag. Should he argue in unprofitable talk or in words with which he can do no good? So he's also accusing Job of wasting words. But you are doing away with the fear of God and hindering meditation before God. So now he accuses him of being anti-God. For your iniquity teaches your mouth, and you choose the tongue of the crafty. Your own mouth condemns you, and not I. Your own lips testify against you. So Eliphaz has not repented in any sense since the last time he talked. He's still jumping on Job with both feet. Are you the first man who was born? Or were you born, brought forth before the hills? Now he's being sarcastic. So, are you like the oldest man alive? Were you there? Maybe before even Adam was there. So, have you listened in the counsel of God? So, were you there listening when it was just God, you know, making plans? Do you limit wisdom to yourself? What do you know that we do not know? What do you understand that is not clear to us? So he's, you know, he's kind of insulted that Job would suggest that they are being stupid in the comments that they're making. Both the gray-haired and the aged are among us, older than your father. Now, I've told you, I estimate that Job is probably in his 40s. When this story takes place. If that's the case, then his father is probably in his 60s at least. And so these guys make an appeal to the aged wise men of their society. You know, we've got all the smart old guys on our side in this, Job. You know, people that are even older than your dad. Are the comforts of God too small for you? Or the words that deals gently with you? Why does your heart carry you away? Why do your eyes flash? This is a description of how Job is apparently really animated, as much as he can physically be at this point in the story, as he's making his comments. His eyes are flashing with his emotion and his passion. Why does your heart carry you away? Why do your eyes flash that you turn your spirit against God and bring such words out of your mouth? So why are you trying to challenge the God who is punishing you for your secret sin? That's his assumption, remember. What is man that he can be pure? Or he who is born of woman that he can be righteous? Behold, God puts no trust in his holy ones, and the heavens are not pure in his sight. How much less one who is abominable and corrupt, a man who drinks injustice like it's water. Now, you might remember, Eliphaz is the guy that claims that he had a spirit visitation, and that this spirit reminded him that humanity is bad. That God has punished his own angels for being bad. Certainly, he's not going to let bad guys, humans, get away with their stuff. And so here he is, repeating that same sort of thing, making the accusation that Job is a bad guy. So of course God is going to punish him. I'll show you. Hear me. What have I seen, I will declare. What wise men have told without hiding it from their fathers, to whom alone the land was given and no stranger passed among them? Again, we've got an appeal to a presumed authority for wisdom among the ancient guys, the old guys. Now, philosophers will sometimes do this. They will appeal to past philosophers as if, the moment you say, so-and-so said this, that should end the argument. Well, that's what these guys are trying. The wicked man writhes in pain all his days, through all the years that are laid up for the ruthless. So again, there he makes the claim that he believes bad things only happen to bad people. So you must be bad. Dreadful sounds are in his ears. In prosperity to the destroyer will come upon him. That's a description of Job. He was very prosperous, and then suddenly bad things happened. So you must be bad, Job. He does not believe that he will return out of the darkness. He is marked for the sword. He wanders abroad for bread, saying, "Where is it?" He knows that a day of darkness is ready at his hand. Distress and anguish terrify him. They prevail against him like a king ready for battle. So he's hungry, and he's going around just wandering from place to place, wondering what's happening to him. Just like Job, you know. Because he has stretched out his hand against God and defies the Almighty, running stubbornly against him with a thickly bossed shield, you know, as if you could attack God. Because he's covered his face with his fat and gathered fat upon his waist, basically made himself prosperous through illicit means. He's lived in desolate cities, in houses that none should inhabit, which were ready to become heaps of ruins. That's the punishment. He's ended up being homeless. He will not be rich. His wealth will not endure, nor will his possessions spread over the earth. He'll not depart from darkness. The flame will shoot, will dry up his shoots, and by the breath of his mouth he will depart. Let him not trust in emptiness, deceiving himself, for it will be paid in full before his time. His branch will not be green. He will shake off his unripe grape like the vine and cast off his blossom like the olive tree. For the company of the godless is barren. Fire consumes the tents of bribery. They conceive trouble and give birth to evil, and their womb prepares deceit.